When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Welcome back. Junkies coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. In Richmond, you can listen to us on 910 The Fan on the AM side, 105.1 FM. We are streaming live on the free Odyssey app. You can take us on the go all across the country. And you can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network. We're brought to you by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. Looking to be their next five-star HVAC technician or plumber, just visit CropMetcalf.com to join their team. I'm John Paul Flame, joined by Johnny Cakes Auville in studio. EB on the road as his daughter has one of her last volleyball matches at Cornell, part of the Ivy League. And we could start right there with our next guest, John Feinstein, best-selling author, Washington Post columnist, joins us now. Brought to you by Golfdom, where they can custom fit you for new GT medals from Titleist or the new Apex irons from Callaway. Visit them in Tysons, Rockville, or Annapolis to get your game ready for fall golf. Golfdom by Worldwide Golf. Get there. And I mentioned EB and Cornell because that's part of the Ivy League. Your latest book is called The Ancient Eight: College Football's Ivy League and the Game They Play Today. And John is just perusing it because we got it yesterday. I'm always amazed. One of the things about your work is you do exhaustive research. You, I believe, interviewed 82 players?
I did. And let me tell you, I do not envy EB making that trip to Cornell, having made it several times.
He does it all the time.
I've done it 100.
Than I am.
Yeah, wow. It's a nightmare, but it's worth it.
Once you're there, it's a great place.
Yeah,
but getting there, Dartmouth, same way. Dartmouth's not on the way to anywhere, but it is a beautiful place. And a lot of the other Ivy League people said to me that Dartmouth was almost like a cult because people go up there, you know, as students, as teachers, whatever, and they never want to leave. Mm. And last year when I was doing the book and they were dealing, of course, with the tragedy of two deaths, their head coach and one of their players, Josh Ballera. I was amazed that there were 9 assistant coaches who had been there at least 8 years, and nobody wants to leave the place once they get there.
It is beautiful up there. John, I don't know this, and again, we just got your book yesterday, and I was driving all day
for
yesterday.
For some reason, publishers send books out by Pony Express. I don't know why.
What program traditionally, though, through the years, has been the most dominant football program? I don't think Cornell is in that mix.
No, Cornell's not. Cornell and Columbia and Brown are sort of at the bottom. Brown's a little bit ahead of Cornell and Columbia. But Dartmouth has won the most Ivy League championships because they don't break ties. Since the presidents will not allow the football teams to take part in postseason. Don't ask me why, because I don't have an answer, and neither did they, really. Mm-hmm. But they play 10 games, 10 weeks, and if there's a tie, like last year, there was a 3-way tie. Dartmouth, Yale, and Harvard all finished at 6-2 in the league. And an amazing story for Dartmouth, by the way, which I'll get to if you want me to. But Dartmouth won the most Ivy League titles, followed by Yale and Harvard. They're 1, 2, and 3.
So, John, before we get to the Commanders, the new book is The Ancient Eight, College Football's Ivy League and the Game They Play Today. The one question that I really have, you know, you point out in the book that a lot of players from the Ivy League make it to the league, that you were surprised by how many scouts go to the games.
Yep.
How difficult is it for the players with the Ivy League academic workload just to be able to do it?
Yeah, it is difficult. That's a very good point. And the players will tell you they basically feel like they have 2 full-time jobs because they love football. The intensity and emotion on an Ivy League sideline is every bit as great as if you go to, Oregon or Notre Dame or any other big-time program you want to pick out, because they love football. They played football all their lives. They know, in most cases, it's going to end when after their senior years. There rarely are fifth-year players. There certainly aren't sixth-year players. So they approach it by saying, okay, I've got two full-time jobs. One is my academics and one is playing football. And they're both important. And most Ivy League players graduate. They rarely transfer. Mm-hmm. Princeton had their first transfer last season for the first time since Jason Garrett in 1988. They don't look in the transfer portal. They hope not to lose many players in the transfer portal, and they rarely lose them. Most of the time, once a player gets to an Ivy League school, he says, I want that degree. I've worked for that degree. I don't want to transfer somewhere where a degree won't mean as much as an Ivy League degree means. And they stay 4 years, and they do graduate, and most of them go on and do things a lot more important than playing football. You know, they go to law school, med school, hopefully not become sports writers, and have a great deal of success. And you mentioned that I did 82 interviews with the players. I have to say, out of the 82, none were bad interviews. Mm. And that's not because I'm such a great interviewer. It's because the kids were smart. They understood what I was trying to do with the book, and they were willing to share their stories. And it made for a book that was a great deal of fun. And I hope if people read it, they'll come away with a new respect for Ivy League football.
Talking to best-selling author, Washington Post columnist John Feinstein. All right, so let's dive into the Commanders. They've played two games since we last spoke.
Right.
And then if you take a larger picture over the last six games, including the Ravens, the Eagles, and the Steelers, they're 3-3, but they also won on a Hail Mary. How right. should fans feel about where this team is right now at 7-4?
Well, the way I would look at it, and I'm probably more objective than most fans, is if I had told you in August they'd be 7-4 right now, what would you have said?
You'd take it.
You would have said, hey, that's a lot of progress mm-hmm. from a team that was 4-13. That probably means that Jaden Daniels is playing well and that they're headed in the right direction. Now, they've lost two in a row, and you're lucky. They were lucky to win the Bears game. But they lost to two good teams since we last spoke. The Steelers are better than I thought they were going to be. And I'm amazed by Russell Wilson's comeback, that he's played as well as he has, because I thought he was done, personally. And the Eagles are good. They're not great. I mean, remember, Washington was ahead after three quarters last night. But they're good. They're solid. And they have a great player in Saquon Barkley, who can break open a game. Very few teams have that running back. They may have a quarterback who can take over a game, but very few teams have a running back who can take over a game, in addition to a good quarterback in Jalen Hurts. So I wouldn't be too discouraged by those two losses if I were a fan. I would say, okay, you know, we knew this would be a key two-game stretch in terms of their chances to win the division. Their chances are much lower now than they were 10 days ago. But if they make the playoffs, and I still think they're going to make the playoffs, because they're at 7 wins and 10 will make it, 9 might make it, then you have to be encouraged by the season in general.
John, do you think that we've seen enough from Jaden to be fully confident that he can be a star in this league?
I am. I don't know about others, but I am. I think he's got the right mentality. He certainly has the physical tools. He's played 10 games. He's had a couple injuries. He's played less than 100%, but you do that in football, especially in the NFL. I think I told you guys the story of walking down the hallway after the Ravens' last game, the year that I did the book, and we were walking from the meeting room to the locker room so the players could talk to the media. And I looked around and I realized the only person not limping, and these were the guys who played Sunday, was me. Everybody else was beaten up. You get to this point in the season, you have aches and pains. You have to work to get ready to play again the next Sunday. And I've said to you right from the beginning that I thought they got lucky getting Jaden Daniels instead of Caleb Williams, and I will stick to that. Although part of Caleb Williams' problems is that they have such an awful team.
John, let's pivot and talk about the Caps here for a second. Through 15 games, Ovi has 10 goals. He's on pace for, I believe, 56. A lot of us before the season thought that it would take a season and a quarter, maybe a season and a
right.
half for him to reach Gretzky. He's way ahead of the pace. The Caps are better than expected. Now, they stubbed their toe a little bit against the Maple Leafs a couple of nights ago at Capital One Arena. Coach Carbs was not happy with the performance, especially over the last 20 to 30 minutes of the game. But the Caps have been better than expected so far.
Yeah, I mean, what are they, 10-4-1?
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, Ovechkin is playing very well. Now, you hope, given, what is he, 38, I think, that he won't
39.
Run out of gas late in the season. 39.
Yeah.
He won't run out of gas late in the season. Every time I look at that gray hair, I go, how can he be playing at this level? And he is. Mm. But I think people should be encouraged by the Caps start. I think they've got the right coach and the right GM in place. And I expect them, you know, they sneaked into the playoffs last year. I expect them to be a legit playoff team this year and maybe win a round. Who knows? You never know who you're going to play.
Do you make switch gears again, John? The Nats have been in the news the last couple weeks. Apparently, Rizzo's making some phone calls, according to rumors. You know, kind of starting to finally sniff around some big time players again, some big time free agents potentially, including Juan Soto. They say he called Boris to just kind of inquire. Who knows? I can't see a scenario where the Learners give him $600 or $700 million.
I can't either.
I mean, it just seems kind of crazy. But I guess you poke around. They can only, you know, stave off the fans winning 60 games, 65 games, whatever it is, for so long. It's about time they make a move, don't you think?
Yeah, excuse me. I do think it's time they make a move. Remember when they sold off all those players a couple of years ago, the big thing was, well, by 2025, we'll be contenders again. Well, we're coming up on 2025. And by the way, I think the rumors that Rizzo's poking around probably come from Rizzo. Because he wants people to know that he's getting involved with big name guys, because the fans want to hear that. But I think that you know, 2 years ago was encouraging because they improved. Last year was not, because they did not improve. And again, I thought Rizzo overreacted at the trade deadline, traded off some good players who could have been helping the team this coming year. But I you know, they've got a lot of young guys who have improved and who need to show a lot more improvement next year so that they can become a legitimate team again.
John, I forget, what's your beef with Rizzo?
Oh, it goes back to, I wrote something about Jason Worth when he went to jail. And I said he deserved to go to jail for, what was it, 5 days, you know, for going 105 and a 55. And Worth was always one of those guys who was, you know, really friendly and outgoing when he played well and the team played well, and then would hide out when he and the team didn't play well. So I was critical of Worth, and he called me up, and, you know, of course I was happy to talk to him. And he started saying things like, you're just trying to sell newspapers. Well, that's the 1950s to begin with. And second of all, then he started cursing me out. And I didn't appreciate that. You know, I said, Mike, we can disagree, but let's be professional about this. Oh, you blank and blank. So we haven't talked much since then.
All right, sounds kind of on brand for
Mike. For the record, we are Rizzo guys too. But
I know you're Rizzo guys. That's fine. Yeah. You can be wrong.
All right, John, congrats on the book. It's 50 books. I mean, it's an incredible achievement.
You're so prolific.
The latest is called The Ancient Eight, College Football's Ivy League and the Game They Play Today.
I wouldn't even do 50 blogs, let alone 50 books. What are we doing here, John? I'm so busy.
Well, it keeps me off the streets. Let's put it that
way.
Okay,
good.
All right,
good.
It's The Ancient Eight. Congratulations.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right. That's John Feinstein, best-selling author, Washington Post columnist. Brought to you by Golfdom, where they can custom fit you for the new GT medals from Titleist. They've got the new Apex irons from Callaway. Visit them in Tysons, Rockville, or Annapolis to get your game ready for fall golf. Golfdom by Worldwide Golf. Get there. Coming up next, we're going to dive back into the Commanders and tackle the issue of playing the good teams and not being able to beat the good teams. Is this a thing? 800-636-1067.